The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
There is this great sense of positivity and patriotism and national pride in the room today, thanks to my panel. Well, thanks to most of my panel. Gavin Duffy, a businessman, broadcaster. Nicol, or Aideen Finnegan, audio producer with the Irish Times. Both have decided to wear their colours on their chest and have come resplendent in green. Nicola Tallant, investigations editor of the Sunday World. Not so much.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not even the tiniest bit of patriotism.
I actually have a green in my ring.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's something. As long as you've got a little bit of
the eyeshadow might have a touch of green
as
well.
I take it back.
Yeah. You've slid in with a subtle and understated approach to patriotism. How did you all find the process of getting in? Normally, I wouldn't care. But given what has happened to the centre of the city, it is more challenging than normal. Did you have to abandon a car and run, Gavin?
Well, you see, I didn't abandon the car because I know the city so well, I'll find a way, and then gave up because, wow, it was, I hate to use the term lockdown, but it felt like that. And my walk was a very pleasant one. I parked in Thomas Street, came across, and was just agog and amazed. And we've been listening to Richard Tierney there, agog and amazed at just the infrastructure. And when you think of the great sporting events around Europe, I think Silverstone Grand Prix holds the biggest crowd at around 200,000. Half a million will be here today.
And they were already out. I was in here. I was probably coming through the centre town around about 7:45 this morning, and there were already tourists starting to claim spots.
I was saying to Nicola and Aideen beforehand, I was trying to work out who was actually going to the parade and who was coming home. This is around, 9 o'clock, and they looked like ones on the way home from
I think the tourists were going to the parade, and the Irish, any of them that you saw sitting on the corner the streets looking a little bit worse for wear. We're probably out yesterday.
Yeah. Thinking about Twickenham and what could have
just
been.
Just thinking about life.
Still.
Yeah.
The ones that you have to feel sorriest for, I imagine the entire city council is filled with people dreading early tomorrow morning, because the clean-up job from 500,000 people coming into the city centre has to be a nightmare.
Well, it was already, I was turfed out of the taxi at the end of Harcourt Street, and there was already remnants of yesterday's party all over the streets. Now, they seem to be cleaning it, hopefully, before the cameras start rolling. But lots of curry chips were had, lots of plastic containers with all that on the ground. Few people might have felt a bit unwell, so there was remnants of that.
Don't.
Yeah, but in general, yeah, I'd say it was a big party night in town last night as well. You know, what a weekend to be a tourist here. It'd be fantastic.
Well, the combination of Six Nations victory yesterday and then Patrick Regan and decent weather. I still can't get over the fact that it's not raining sideways.
The difference, the city looks so pretty when it's sunny, you know.
Anton, can you give a shout out to all the public transport drivers, particularly Dublin Bus, who will ferry thousands to and from festivities today? I would also ask people to be patient while we navigate the diversion routes. The diversion routes, not criticising anybody in particular, Adrian, I don't know what your experience is, they're not that clearly mapped out. You sort of arrive to the surprise of discovering that a road is closed.
Well, it's interesting because I think if you are not familiar with the city, it will be a surprise. But I feel like they're quite predictable. It's always Merrion Square, it's always Customs House Quay, and it's always the approach roads leading up and around to them that are, and obviously St. Patrick's Street as well, are closed off. So once you know that, you kind of know how far you can get in. I'm parked in Dublin 8. I came up from County Kildare this morning. So I've kind of did a quick check of the A Road Watch to see, is it the usual? It is the usual. I'll be grand. But I think if you aren't familiar with it, you will be confounded by, right, you can't turn right here and you can't go here. And where am I going to end up? I wish I'd taken the dart.
Text to say, happy St. Patrick's Day to Stephen and Sinead Cummins travelling to Dublin to visit Larry Cummins in the Manor Hospital. We're gradually descending into hospital requests as the morning goes on. There is obviously news, apart from it being Patrick's Day, ranging from the possibility of a new political party led by Michael McDougall, that's according to John Drennan in the Daily Mail, through to the Sunday Independent, and that weird story of the guard who gave a bike to a pensioner and almost had his career dissolve as a function of it. We will bring you all of that after the break. Aideen, I'll kick off with you. That story that John Drennan has on the front of the Irish Mail on Sunday, 7 TDs considering McDougall alliance. This is after the success of his role in the no campaigns for the referendum, a sense that he has political momentum and a sense that he has some fellow travellers.
Yes, so it's not clear how many people were tuning into the referendum early, but if you were, it was non-stop Michael McDowell representing the no side, hearkening that there would be issues to tax law if you were basing families on durable relationships and all the rest of it.
And we have to give him credit for prescience. He was on this programme 2 weeks before the vote and he said, this will be Senate again. It'll reverse from what the polls are saying.
I heard him, Anton. He said, you said, will it really, could it really swing that much in 2 weeks? And my God, was he right. So obviously the independent TDs, now we have to say we don't really, only time will tell exactly why the two referendums were absolutely trounced. But there is a an argument to say that there is a conservative minority in Ireland who are poorly represented, shall we say, in terms of politics, and that the rural independents probably, if they could ally themselves with Michael McDowell, could bring about that representation for them. And we don't know, like Michael McDowell, former Taoiseach, Minister for Justice, Attorney General, left politics and went back to being a barrister after the 2007 election. And will he get back into politics again? I think the noises that he has made about certain issues, like he called the defeat of the referendum an end to the woke, I'm using air quotes out, woke-driven virtue signalling. Those were his words. And so that sort of motivation says to me is that he feels somebody needs to roll up their sleeves and take on all these social justice warriors.
Well, we were speaking to him after the on the weekend that the referendum results came in, and obviously hopped the ball to say, what of your own political prospects off the back of this? And in amongst his answer, the word no didn't appear.
There you go. And any political correspondent worth their salt then, I suppose, would go investigating what's going on here. And lo and behold, apparently there have been talks, according to John Drennan, writing in the Mail on Sunday, that independent TDs, including Ronan, or sorry, they're all senators. I'm about to read.
Yeah, Jared Crockwell is seen as being a fellow traveller, as is Ronan Mullen.
Yes.
But then there's a series of TDs.
There are Noel Grealish, Michael Fitzmaurice, Verona Murphy, and Carol Nolan, Marion Harkin in Sligo Leitrim. So there have been talks going on behind the scenes, and apparently one independent has spoken and said, if there was said McDowell could be the people's watchdog if we got behind him. We formed an alliance. And there was a government TD that said, apparently, if there was a party led by Michael McDowell and Fitzmaurice, I'd join tomorrow and there'd be a few coming with me.
Is he tapping into something, Nicola, or could he be tapping into something? In the sense that what I've been intrigued by is not so much the results in the referendum, but people's passion about, not justifying, because that sounds like they see it as a negative, but people's passion to commit to their vote in the referendum. Anytime we talk about it, we get really, really inundated with texts that say, no, this wasn't confusion. I knew exactly what I was voting for. And there's a sense of resentment about the question that they were asked. And the only person who seems to have caught that early was McDowell.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I have to say, like, I don't usually have my head in politics, but I have my head sort of maybe on the ground with the normal people as such. And they definitely, I mean, I think they definitely knew what they were doing. Now, a lot of people didn't go out to vote, I have to say, including myself, which is a disgrace. There was 3 voters in our house and none of them went to vote. And that's the first time ever. I always vote. There wasn't enough for me coming at me about it. I would tend to look at a lot of social media. I take my news, obviously, from various places, legitimate media as well as social media. But what I was getting in my face was Katie Hopkins, Tommy Robinson, and these very influential characters talking about, you know, the Irish need to vote no.
Katie Hopkins,
yes,
weighed in on that, did she?
Weighed in big time. And, you know, what's her following here, I don't know. But they certainly do have a following. And now they're extreme. I'm not in any way, shape or form saying McDowell is kind of on the same pitch as them. But they're very loud voices. And I think that from what I got from the whole thing was, I just think they totally misunderstood how people are getting their media at the moment, how people are getting fed. I think there's a huge amount of work that can be done on these social medias that are poo-pooed maybe by more mainstream.
But that's what I mean by the reaction when we talk about it. It's not that people say I was confused.
I didn't see him on TikTok, but you know what I mean? He did sort of maybe get the essence of what people were thinking on the ground. But I think that the mainstream politicians, like, where are they to the general public? Because, you know, a lot of people are not reading physical newspapers. A lot of people aren't subscribing. online. They're getting their media very quickly in headlines and in little flashes of video.
Well, that was Patrick Tobin's point, that whether it be through new media or anything else, that there was an issue of a disconnect between the sort of the political elites. That was what he believed anyway. Because again, AIM2 was on the correct side of the vote. He believed that there was that disconnect, that you had an urban Dublin, slightly disconnected liberal elite political set talking to voters who had a very different outlook. One of the things in this, Gavin, that they are suggesting, though, is it isn't just that McDougall might throw his hat in the ring for a bit of politics. It's that given the shake-up and how tight things might be at the next election, it could be a balance of power. If he has 7 or 8 votes together in the Dáil, that could be means to get a cabinet seat.
Oh, yes. Independence and any alliance that will form could find itself very much at the centre of government. And, you know, Michael McDougall, let's not overreact. He went on to the pitch, ran to the far end where there was an open goal and scored numerous times. Well done, Michael. I've great admiration for the man as a politician, by the way.
Now, hang on for a minute. To go with your analogy, Gary Lineker once said, it's not that I'm in the right place at the right time, it's that I'm in the right place every time. Mm. There's an element of, it may be prescient, it may also be that he saw what the rest of us didn't.
Yeah. But there was no opposition. He had a free run.
Sinn Féin, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil.
If you could tell me, if you could produce from your archive, passionate spokespersons from any of those parties making any type of sense on the referendums, I certainly will say there was no opposition. He scored an open goal. But he did it exceptionally well. And I have to say, he made me rethink when he started saying how, what is durable? It was almost easy. But he's a very senior politician, and I have a great regard for him. I was in the RDS that night in, 2007, and rarely do you feel very sorry and sad for somebody.
Oh, as, he was gutted, if I remember.
Yeah. It was John Gormley, I think, took his seat. And he's always been, he's a handful of politicians you'd always respect because he has a view. Here's the thing I'm going to say, though. I see great potential for Michael Fitzmaurice leading independence, forming an alliance and being in the next government.
Sorry, Fitzmaurice or McDougall?
No, Michael Fitzmaurice.
Oh.
Right. He's a very capable person, right? I don't know if Michael McDougall coming along and joining that makes it a conservative right-wing movement. The young people that I know, you use terms like that, sorry folks, when you're 60, in your 60, but the 30-somethings who are really suffering the affordable housing shortage, they're going to have to vote Sinn Féin or find alternatives because it's not in their hearts to vote for the so-called established parties. And I think Michael McDougall brings a lot of political experience and intelligence and good communication skills, but I think pushes it further towards the right. The PDs weren't right, but they were tax right, if you know what I mean.
They did a good impression of being right for a party.
Yeah. But right these days means different than it did in the 80s. That's
a fair
point to make.
Do we have any sense, Aideen, as to whether or not he might have aspirations towards the park?
I have no insider knowledge that he would be considering running for the Oris, but my sense is that Michael McDougall, obviously, is a columnist in the Irish Times as well. So if you read his column, you'll see him getting digs into what he terms wokeism quite a lot. Like I can't remember what the title of the column was, but it was something quite unrelated to 15-minute cities, this concept that we come out of our cars and everything would live 15 minutes in proximity to us. And he said the anti-mobility gang get their way. And I remember thinking, anti-mobility gang, that's a very interesting way to describe environmentalists, So I feel he's very motivated by what he sees as wokeism. He has used this word himself, by the way. I'm not just planting it in there. But he would also, if there was an alliance, these are rural independent TDs, he would round out that to be a metropolitan and a rural.
Well, it's interesting.
Semi-party.
I mentioned the text that we keep getting every time we mention this. And on ordinary people fed of being ignored and overregulated, carers can be helped a lot without a referendum. People appreciate straight talkers, not social media influencers. Another, why are you turning on Michael McDougall now? I don't think anybody was turning on Michael McDougall. It wasn't an open goal. He had the whole government, including the opposition parties, standing in front of it. Well, if you have a view, 53106 at a cost of 30 cent or 087.
I stand over open goal. And a pitch that had a gradient that was so much in his favour. But, like, he still, to use your paraphrase Gary Lineker, he still had,
He took the opportunity when it fell to his feet.
But the fact that he scored about 10, 12, 13, 14 times because there was nobody else out there and he was the obvious choice for any broadcast media, he did very, very well and was hugely influential.
Now, the Sunday Independent leads with a story which is Gar the Bike row, sworn testimony changed by supervisor. This has been sort of bubbling along and it is weird. It's the story of a guard who gave a pensioner a bike and had his career come apart around the seams because of it. Or at least that's what it looks like at first glance. Nicola Tallon, can you explain what the actual background to this is?
So this was a guard working in the Midlands, 30 years experience, exemplary record, who during the sort of COVID lockdowns, was an elderly man living in his locality who we used to go up and down to the GAA club, needed a bike. There was no bike shops open. So we went around the back where there was a couple of bikes that had either been seized or taken in and, you know, stolen, whatever. And he gave him one on loan to give back once the bike shops reopened.
So this was a bike that was in the possession of the Gardaí because it had been stolen from somebody else and was there
either
for evidence.
Stolen or whatever, they found possession. Right. Now, do you remember at the beginning of all those awful times 4 years ago, bikes were like gold? Like, literally, I remember my local bike shop couldn't get in enough secondhands to try and fix them. Everybody was getting out in bikes. So all of that is making sense to us that the man needed a bike, right? All of it is making sense until, they start to investigate this guard. They raid his house. A file is sent to the DPP.
They raid his house?
Mm.
Okay.
And then the DPP recommends no charges are brought. So the Gardaí themselves initiate internal inquiries into his activities. He didn't fill out the paperwork, basically. Now, all of this, it's a ridiculous story. It's ridiculous. I mean, anybody with any sense would look at it and go, what in the name of God, and all the resources that are wasted into that, and aren't there people carrying out proper crimes in this country? Now, the National Bureau of Criminal Investigation were involved. Specialist
and I assume
Gardaí
the Gardaí will say, well, look, we have a requirement in terms of chain of evidence. This isn't Garda property, therefore we can't, even if it's only a bicycle, give it away willy-nilly to somebody.
Yeah, I think, you know, you also need with these big institutions a bit of common sense. I mean, what's happened is, since Drew Harris has come in and these promises of change within the Garda Síochána, a lot of people will say that there is this sort of, they've nearly thrown the baby out of the bathwater as such. Like, yes, the Garda Síochána needed to change. There was a culture of nepotism in it. There was all sorts of kind of, you know, I'll square that ticket for you, et cetera, went on for years. I think we like a little bit of that as the Irish, considering it's Patrick's Day. We like a little bit of boldness, don't we? Especially if it's coming our own way. But this whole concentration has been put on paperwork within the guards on suspending anybody suspected of anything at all. There's hundreds of Gardaí out there suspended at the moment on full pay. Some of the investigations are very worthwhile. They will involve corruption payments to Gardaí from drug gangs, and corruption is a huge big problem now with organised crime. But some of them are utterly ridiculous and they seem to go on for years and years.
Well, this seems to go on for years. You mentioned his home getting raided. Ali Bracken, writing in the Sunday Independent, says that the home was raided in June 2020 and we're still dealing with this, what, 2.5, 3 more years later?
And like, I'm not surprised by it. I know it's a totally ridiculous story and everybody thinks it's crazy, but I've heard, not similar to the bike now, but not quite as ridiculous as that, but other stories of kind of, you know, Gardaí being investigated for things that really don't require that much resources, and their homes have been raided. Their phones, their computers have been seized. They have been left on full paid leave for years, usually until they hit retirement, at which point they retire out.
And the problem is solved for everybody.
But it's draconian. Look, there's an anti-corruption unit there that's doing some great work. But tying up the resources of the National Bureau of Criminal Investigation into that, I would think there's a bigger reason to inquire as to who ordered that and who oversaw that and who thought that was a good use of public funds.
While we are talking about bizarre stories, we must address a little bit of the Where is Kate Middleton stuff, because that has also departed normal orbit and gone completely into outer space. Just to update you, I mentioned earlier on that it was an unseasonably nice Patrick's Day. Here, this, I think, is the perfect text to summarise just how unusual it is for Patrick's Day to be nice. Back in the early 2000s, we had a very warm Patrick's Day, says the texter. And in 1975, it was a scorcher. So there we are. We're in the third of the set from 1975, 2001 and today. We'll be back after this break. We were able to narrow down, by the way, which year in the early 2000s. We've established it was sunny once in 1975. It was also sunny in the early 2000s. Aideen Finnegan has narrowed it down because she recalls the day. You were working, it was 2000.
It was the year 2000. It was my very first job. I had the day off school, so I was working and earning some money, but I was raging because it was
model kid.
Absolutely.
School.
Yeah, I know. The young green expulsion
of
Gluck.
She was destined for the Irish Times from age 14.
But more importantly, we have established that it's like, is it a cicada that's the bug that goes underground and lives for 7 years? Every 24 to 25 years, we get a sunny Patrick's Day, and this seems to be one of them.
Hold your wish, it's early.
That's true. Yes, I shouldn't jinx it. I'll stop mentioning it. We should look back at, because this weekend, not just Patrick's Day, but our second Six Nations in a row. And I found myself watching it yesterday, Gavin, thinking, well, it's not a very commanding performance. And then sort of having to shake myself and think, we're winning two Six Nations in a row. How did we ever end up in this kind of position?
Yeah, and if you're somebody of my vintage, you know, the odd success beating, you know, one of the teams.
We
you
had
know,
our name carved in the wooden spoon back then.
You know, waiting for a triple crown would be the height of our ambitions. So, yes, it's fantastic. I'm still grieving over Twickenham because we could have been making history of two Grand Slams back to back. But when you think of it, England playing their best rugby in 3 years and Ireland playing their worst rugby in 3 years, in Twickenham, lost by a point in the last moment. So we are the best team in the Northern Hemisphere.
That was a rank England team, though, that suddenly got good at the wrong time for us.
But, you know, that is sport and that's what makes it so exciting. But could I make a more general comment about just an amazing week that we've had? You know, Cillian Murphy winning an Oscar, rise and rise in the worlds of international arts and culture. But Willie Mullins clocking up his 100th winner at Cheltenham this week. Ireland being the undisputed best team in the Northern Hemisphere and possibly the world. We'll know when they tour South Africa later this year. I'm going to suggest that's a reflection of the vibrancy of our economy as much as our ability and sporting prowess. So whilst we can't build affordable homes, the economy post-COVID is back and is thriving. And so what you see is if you go back two generations, horse racing, for example, Arkell, he was an Irish horse. Yes, he was bred in County Meath. Yes, he was trained by the Drapers, but he was owned by the Duchess of Westminster, Mrs. Grosvenor. You know, the British establishment were the kings and queens of horse racing. Now it is, did you see the Heffernans, a la Dunstores Heffernans with a winner at Cheltenham this week? You see, you know, Michael O'Leary, you see the Donnellys, the Turleys, Irish businesses. Because there's a wealth in our country. Yes, we could all debate how it's to be distributed.
Well, we could also point to O'Leary and the Heffernans had a few quid 20 years ago as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah, but it takes 20 years, right? So you look at rugby. Let's make a quick switch to rugby. This little island nation supports four professional teams, the four provinces. Scotland can muster two, same population, right? But, Wales are going back. Limerick, you know, have come so good in hurling. Oh, it's a coincidence. JP McManus has opened a checkbook. Dublin dominate Gaelic football because when you are in the capital city, you attract the type of sponsorship that funds, although in an amateur code, in a professional way, it funds elite athleticism. What I'm saying is we are now going to enjoy sporting success we never dreamed of, because there is the wealth in the country to support it.
And when's it going to trickle through to the football team?
Well, look, you know, it does come along that you need to be spending the money on the right things. And, I refer anybody to the excellent Mark Tighe. Have a read of the book and you'll see that if there isn't proper governance in sport.
This does then beg the question, if we have the kind of money that is causing us to be able to own thoroughbreds that win at Cheltenham, how come we can't use it to spend on housing? Because that's the other story that is there this weekend. And Aidan, you might have a view on this. We saw the pictures of the tents being cleared out from Mount Street. Now, a lot of people are saying where they got moved to was nicer tents. It isn't exactly a solution to that problem. And we see news in the papers this weekend that particularly the Business Post reporting that the government is finally admitting that their housing targets are significantly below demand. We are no closer to seeing this issue resolved.
No, it appears not. And I think the sight of tents going around the block of, you know, the International Protection Centre on Mount Street, I think that's scary, to be honest with you. And it is a physical manifestation of how we're grappling with this situation. But I find it instructive that so many people who, protested outside immigration centres, the arson attacks on immigration centres, they said, no, not here. But the street, that's fine. And I think it's really interesting that is where those chickens have come home to roost, because what you get is a different set of social problems. You have homeless, and they are men, because we have learned that they are prioritising any accommodation that they can find. They are prioritising it for women and families. And that's just how the single men get left on the street. So, my colleague Kitty Holland was writing about this during the week, that these are, these men that our community seem to be so afraid of, that she has found them to be, very gentle and very sort of passive and, upset about the fact that they're on the street rather than angry, But how long can you have a situation like that before that does turn into a bigger social problem? If you're going to humiliate and degrade people by having them go to the toilet on the street, how long is that, do you get, before that turns into something much more sinister?
And how long before we actually begin to see a chipping away at the underlying problem, which is the capacity to house those who are on the waiting lists, which then allows you to deal with the pressures on both refugees coming in from Ukraine and the pressures of people seeking international protection? We don't seem to be gaining on it much.
No, and it's just causing so many sort of problems within marginalised communities as well, who genuinely believe that, these people don't have a place because they don't have a home. There's a knock-on effect of it. But look, you talk about wealth and all the money being flooded into sport, and I suppose hockey and cricket as well are another two sports where there's, we're making waves. But there's people today staying in the Shelburne Hotel, probably, what is it, over 1,000 a suite, and people living on the street. And that is the way life is. I don't know what the exact solution is. I think there's been successive governments who haven't tackled the housing problem, and that is probably going to end up changing the face of the country. Maybe Sinn Féin will get into power and they say they're going to be able to do this, that and the other. I don't understand why we haven't been able to solve it. If you look back into social history at the building of all those big estates, Coolock, outwards to Tallaght, Blanchardstown, the creation of those, which was to move people out of slums in the tenements, the problems there started immediately. They were sort of quick reactions to something that we had let fester. And the social problems within those housing estates have gone down through generations until you have people now sometimes living in what is akin to, just crack dens on their street. People are terrified living in those communities. And that's the problem started because of lack of planning going forward. So we're in a place that we do need to have a solution that maybe is properly thought out and not just a knee-jerk reaction.
53106 at a cost of 30 cents. If you want to get in touch, or 087 1400 106. To the really pressing issues, just to update you, somebody's arguing with you, Aideen, saying that actually it was St. Patrick's Day in 2001 when there was good weather, because they celebrated it on the 18th of May that year because of foot and mouth, says Lorraine from Dundalk. Another, it was 1999. I remember because we got married that year. It was 19 to 20 degrees. It was fabulous.
Gee, we had a run of great St. Patrick's Day around the millennium, didn't we?
It was actually a three-year heyday from 99 through 2001. Come here, before we wrap up, I know in theory you're not meant to talk about this because in some way it is seen as being a sort of beneath discussion. I am going to nonetheless. What is the story with Kate Middleton? Gavin Duffy, you have been advising people for some time in relation to their communications. Surely what the royals are doing is pouring fuel on this fire again and again and again and never solving the actual where is she and what's wrong with her question.
Yes, and I'm somebody who, I have to admit, have studiously avoided the interest in Kate Middleton.
Oh, come on.
On St. Patrick's Day, I have to admit, I'm one of those Irish people who just does not understand, get, regard or respect the royal. You know, that's their monarchy and that's how it operates over there. I just don't understand
it. A very, very famous celebrity figure disappears and then puts a Photoshop picture of herself. That's odd.
The one thing all of us in this room know, you cannot allow a vacuum to exist. And if you don't fill the vacuum, other stuff goes in there very, very quickly. And I'm just conscious of it on a week. You know, Charlie Bird, you know, such a well-known person, you know, could have stayed sort of, you know, at home and done nothing, etc. But he decides to use, I don't like to use the word celebrity in Ireland, but he decided to use his recognisable face, let's say, to do good, as did another RT person, Colin Murray, before him as well, but both tragically left us, RIP.
Where is she now?
I don't know, but look.
Have you a good supposition? Have you a theory?
No, you see, this is it. I'll allow my colleague.
Even.
I don't allow myself to even guess, except to say
I'll allow that, my colleagues, he says, flinging them under the bus.
Yes, no. It's not that. It's just that I do know different people deal with illnesses in different ways. And somebody who might be sick, you know, wants to come out and talk about it. And another person, for some reason, wants to keep it to themselves. She said she'll be back in April. We'll see. But like, to the thing of advice, I just don't know how that whole royal family machine doesn't have better political and press advice.
Operating off the never explain, never complain.
But throw out a weird Dr. Photoshop.
A year from UK odd. Taxpayers to run that machine. Would you not get good press advisors?
And whatever about filling the vacuum? I mean, they caused the problem in the first place by doctoring a photograph and putting it out to a media who is just so on top of anything being doctored because we have to protect our position. And surely they know that.
Very odd. There is stuff that I want to give people a heads up on. First of all, Nicola, you are going to be hiking your way around the nation for RTE.
Well, I have hiked.
We haven't witnessed your hiking.
Looking well on it.
Your hiking is still on tape.
Yeah, a bit different. Waterford for the Tracks and Trails show on RTE. I did that last summer. It was absolutely beautiful. And I promised I would make my way back to Waterford again, but it was really, really nice.
And that's going to be Friday the 5th of April, 7:30, RTE1. You on the Boulis Loop and Dunmore East Coastal Path.
Trying to find a bit of crime in such beautiful territories.
I met my future husband, by the way, on Patrick's Day 2001. Foot and mouth stopped me travelling home to Mayo, so I had to stay in Dublin and met the love of my life in the moat on Suffolk Street. Apparently, there you are. So foot and mouth is the reason that you got wedded originally, which brings me to our final thing of this panel. Gavin, 31 years ago today, what was that? What was the exact date?
1990, the 17th of March, 1993, I got married.
Happiest day of your life?
It certainly, well, look.
Say yes quickly.
That was Gavin.
No, but like, it's been the happiest 31 years. But you have to be careful not saying that in a boastful way. If you're just lucky enough that that thing works for you called marriage and family and that. And I used to hear people saying, well, you're only as happy as your unhappiest child. And now, you know, with four adults, all of whom are in a wonderful spot in their lives, I'm just literally so happy. But that explains, because you did say I was, you know.
Yeah, tie and everything.
Because I'm going off to the
anniversary. Oh, this isn't for us.
Yeah. No. But Anton, I said I'd get up a little earlier. So you, I could, instead of changing afterwards, I'd be able to go directly now. And Orla, happy anniversary to you.
Well, thank you very much, Gavin. Thank you likewise to Nicola Tallant, investigations editor with the Sunday World, and Aideen Finnegan, audio producer with the Irish. You don't want to reveal anything about your personal relationships on air, Aideen, do you? I mean, now seems to be the
this
moment.
This is the time.
Oh, gosh. Thanks for minding the kids while I come in here, Cormac.
Beautiful. And, say hi to Dad for me.
That is it for the panel this morning.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.